Now, though, it's 6:30 and time for Opera on Three, which was recorded at Glyndebourne in June. The presenter was Christopher Cook.
Welcome to Sussex and to a tale of 50 brides for 50 brothers. Here in the gardens at Glyndebourne, one of the happy couples is stepping out in their wedding finery. The groom in immaculate black and the bride swathed in white satin right up to her face. Both of them, like us, waiting for the curtain to rise on a new production of Francesco Cavalli's opera, Ipermestra, prepared and conducted by William Christie. Theirs is a grand wedding, as it might be today in Libya, Syria or Iraq. Cavalli's Ipermestra has been fast-forwarded from the Baroque 17th century to the troubled Middle East of today, and the producer is Graham Vick.
We've done it in a generic, modern, contemporary Middle East, and obviously the Middle East is much closer to us now than it was in the 17th century. And we understand it, we feel it, but we've also discovered that we only have to scrape our own civilization slightly to find that we're exactly the same. And let nobody dare think themselves better or more civilised or more developed or more liberal.
Graham Vick, who has produced this new production of Cavalli's opera Ipermestra. Perhaps we will know better by the end of this evening here in an auditorium where everything seems somehow turned upside down. So apart from the Middle Eastern setting, the small orchestra, all of the members of the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, led by William Christie at the harpsichord, are sitting only just a step or so below the stage. And they're dressed in Oriental costumes. You can see what I mean in the production photos that you'll find on the Radio 3 website, along with a full cast list and a summary of the plot. Well, I'm joined tonight here in the box by the opera historian Sarah Lenton. Sarah, there is, of course, a great tradition of staging Cavalli's operas here at Glyndebourne, begun by the scholar-musician Raymond Leppard.
Yeah, and I remember them, actually, as a kid coming here. I suspect it's all going to be rather different tonight, but Leppard gave us Cavalli, and he gave us an opulence, which I think is very much part of the 17th century way of doing things. Perhaps the sounds will be a little bit different, but I remember with great affection the wonderful flamboyant costumes on the stage back in the 60s.
And they were written for Venice, but tonight's opera wasn't written for that kind of city that was opera mad by the middle of the 17th century. It was actually written as a commission for the Medici family with a libretto by Giovanni Andrea Moniglia.
Yes, it was written for the Medici, but actually the show was written 4 years before it was appropriated by the Medicis for Venice, as far as I can understand. And it was quite a lean show because it was going to be put on in a public theatre in Venice, which meant that they had to be careful of the cost, and so the orchestra was kept to a dozen or so players. And when it moved across as a court entertainment, suddenly all sorts of things happened. So you got a ballet, and you got stage effects and a vastly more spectacular sort of production.
Can you think of a kind of contemporary parallel to what this production might have been in the 17th century?
Immediately. I'm thinking of the opening ceremony at the Olympic Games or something like that. This is a society which enjoys celebrating itself and putting on a show not just for the rich but for the populace as a whole.
We also know quite a lot, unusually, about what actually happened and what the audience saw on stage originally.
This was done with all the apparatus of a 17th century theatre, all the fun of having a covered theatre so you could have gods up in the flies on chariots, you could have trapdoors coming up, and all the scenery would have run on tracks across the stage, which meant a mountain could appear and split. Or you could take off a palace, it would just rumble into the stage, and behind you'd see a seascape. And in this particular show, apparently a benevolent peacock appears and saves the heroine at the last moment, and all sorts of jolly things like that.
Sarah, thank you very much indeed. Stay with us, and we'll talk again perhaps after we've seen Acts 1 and 2 in the interval. Despite the spectacle, the story of the 50 daughters of King Danao, King of Argos, marrying his brother Egito's 50 sons, does seem a rather odd subject to celebrate, as it did, a royal birth. And all the more so when Danao demands that his daughters should kill their husbands on their wedding night. An unfriendly oracle has predicted that he will be murdered by one of the boys. Every daughter does her duty except one, Ipermestra. That's the soprano Emeku Borat tonight, who falls in love with her new husband, Linceo, sung by the countertenor Raffaele Pei. Hypermestra is torn between duty to her father and her newfound love, Emirku Borat.
She's stubborn, she's strong, but also she's loyal, and she's not fearful to show her emotions. She's brave, but also she's miserable. So by the end, she becomes absolutely the victim of basically everyone, and she wants to die. So yes, she's fighting, but not forever.
Emirku Borat. And her father, Danau, that's the baritone Renato Dolcini, is certainly spoiling for a fight with his daughter when she refuses to obey his orders.
He tries every way he has to persuade Hypermestra. He tries sobbing, then he gets angry, then he tries to be tender. He really tries literally everything. And that's already in the music and in the libretto. It's very interesting because you can really give so many shades to the character.
Renato Dolcini, King Danau of Argos, whose palace lives in the shadows of its former glory, a distressed eastern version of the Baroque magnificence of Versailles, perhaps, with gold and gilt and dark green walls, a high coffered ceiling, and pilasters crowned by palm leaves. But when brides and grooms walk to their weddings under an arch of balloons, watched by the king on his throne, on their right there's a barbed wire fence and a mound of dirt to shelter behind. After the marriage, the wedding night, with Hypermestra and Linceo starting their honeymoon in the suite of a slightly fly-blown grand hotel with a handful of nodding oil wells in the background behind the barbed wire fence. Hypermestra spares her new husband from the large knife that her father has given her, and on her urging, he flees as she spills red wine on the bed to suggest his blood. A messy task for Hypermestra's nurse Berenice when she bustles in with a laundry basket. This is a travesti role tonight, sung by the tenor Mark Wilde, who looks as if he's walked into a charity shop and told them not to wrap it, she's going to wear the dress and carry the handbag. In jail for disobeying her father, Hypermestra is still in her wedding dress, while Berenice spins a plot. Let General Arbante, sung tonight by the tenor Benjamin Hewlett, marry her. When the general brutally forces attentions on her, Hypermestra throws him off, refusing to believe that Linceo is indeed gathering an army to kill her father. Surely he is coming to rescue his new wife. In a way, and just as much as Hypermestra, Raffaele Pays, Linceo is a victim of terrible circumstances.
Linceo is an incredible hero and lover at the same time. In the beginning, there is a lot of innocence and happiness and real love for Hypermestra. And the more we go towards the end of the opera, the more he becomes a warrior. But he's very virtuous. The war has to be done for political reasons, but not because his heart wants to go against Hypermestra.
Raffaele Pay, whose Linceo, King Danau, believes is marching to murder him. The king tries to buy off his rival with a promise that he shall have his kingdom, while Hypermestra asks her friend Elisa, sung by the soprano Anna Quintash, to beg Linceo to spare her father's life. Berenice is up to her meddling again. Maybe Linceo will fall in love with the glamorous Elisa, who beneath her black robe sports an up-to-the-fashion-minute pink suit and stilettos. But first, the boys. Linceo's army has arrived in a khaki-green military truck, and he sends his general Del Miro to rescue Hypermestra. Enter Arbante in a sleek Mercedes-Benz, a snake in the grass. Furious at being rejected by Hypermestra, he tells Linceo that his wife has now married a prince of Corinth and that the army of Argos is marching on him. In a flash, Linceo turns against the woman he has loved.
This is also an aspect of how truthful he is and how real and how natural he is. He's just a young boy who has in front of himself a big responsibility, and he has to revenge his father. So perhaps that's also how quick in your youth you take decisions and you go against your beliefs, I think.
Raffaele Pay, who sings the role of Linceo tonight. His Hypermestra is the Emirku Borat, Benjamin Hewlett is Arbante, and Renato Dolcini, King Danau. Anna Quintash sings Elisa, and Mark Wilde, Berenice. Rodrigo Ferreira is Del Miro, Anthony Gregory, Vafrino, David Webb, Asace, and Alessandro Fischer, Alindo. William Christie conducts members of the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, led by Cati Debreceni, in Acts 1 and 2 of Graham Vick's production of Francesco Cavalli's Hipermestra.
Thank you. ancora quando nel tuo sembiante fissai lo sguardo e che di lui compresi essere vaghi raggi al corsa e te conobbi, conobbi allor che in vano te cogareggia ogni metà più rara. All'oro delle chiave ci vendicherà i suoi tesori e del bel volte fiore cielo di flore sulla trenica.
Sì, sì, è mio.
destra arde il cor mio tra gelosi sospetti temete sole e paventai dell'ombre ed or potrò mia vita e mio martire vederti gremo d'altri non morire e fate or Vitalia starmi in seno se già l'acque vie meno ogni spirito dolente e più partire perder la vita allor ch'io vissi con gli spirti d'arbante qual ti giurai qual dissi d'esser ti fu di costante ma poi che volli fare trate Dio io non fossi più mio tutti tutti ripose nella bella iperdestra i miei desiri si spira e suoi respiri lo spirito del mio cuore se della vita mia sole viver di lei vivo l'olore se io non ti sono amante in colpa di per me stra e non arvante
la speranza o oh mio caro è la base d'amor folle che mentre per mestra è delincio consorte se caduta è la speme amor vacilla dunque torna partante ritorna ancor col giove vostri amore
dunque non amata apprendi d'un disperato amore e tuo proprio tormento il mio dolore
tu solo arvante solo mentre mette nel tuo fruello il cuore in mano di furore strezzi non sei mio
appetito mio, di pigliare anch'io il settimo marito. Ma poi di quest'età non lo concede, di tal giorni rimenso la memoria commuove ogni mio senso. Chissà cose fatte si fanno le spose a Firenze del re, 50 figlia con altri tanti maschi del suo fratello Egitto. Io ben prevedo, se fia chissà suo figlio, ciascuno al padre in renda si fa condo, che debbi pochi mesi d'un parentado solo e pierisi il mondo. Ma tu, come pensosa, lascia che io ben ti miri, come si lagrimosa, forse perché sospiri. Oh, io ben m'accorgo, intendo il tuo pensiero, con le 50 spose all'ultimo solazzo vorresti, sì o non ero, entrar nel guazzo. Verrà pensi, vedi dove, anche per te questo bravato di, verrà pensi. Asciuga il pianto e spera intanto, leggiando sposo e guarda a tua beltà, qui ti anerà quella parte, amor per lui ferì. Io man will come, you see, you come.
Misera, e qual decio all'aspro affanno mio spera il conforto. Termini il mio penare col mio. Fantasia, l'ardente frenesia del sentidona di pigliar marito, non intendo né comprende come per lieve affanno ogni strabocchi della stagion del riso. Il pianto agli occhi.
Dovrei a te sola che puoi rompere un rio destin, figlia se vuoi, ma non osa la lingua aprirti il ver, tu tradimento insano che contro me disegna di tua mano, se con il vita me davvero giuri obrar con petto forte. Vita a te si tolga morte.
Padre, quattro sorte turba se me di si me ha
stringo, ti stringo il seno, pietà di accesa, se dai bando al timor, vinta di presa. Del tempio là, su riveriti altari, appunto orvolge l'anno, e dal desio portato, chiese al gran Dio di Delo, quel che contro di me racchiude il fato. E d'Egitto la prole, volarmi dovesse regno e vita, degli oracoli, oh Dio, fur le risposte. Tempo trascorse che di lir cena sulle vicine aree dal mio crudo cervano d'armi e di tende fu ingombrato il piano. Quindi per evitare l'alte ruine con simulata pace di Marte spinsi da e dilette figlie ad arte non marital mi strinsi con barbari nipoti. Ma perché il mondo appresta e mai sta di offesa sul sedelata col sangue con la morte che destra sedile sangue il ferro e langue sopra che nuda fronte aureo di arena la strea sforzata la sacrilega stirpe stintaccata. A te figlia sapresti lo scampo a me all'aurata morte. Già pronta ogni altra via me promise truncare mia difesa allo sposo fatal di vita e fino. Tu che saggia e giurasti mi è più spiglio che d'amore ardente.
Figlia, hai cruda e per la madre. cerbia di amore. Tu micidial, tu parricida Sancia, al mio volere t'appiglia.
Mora tu quel liceo.
Ora sei mia figlia.
non è il tuo fuoco, diverso a quel che io sento.
Che le notti degli amanti e dei ladri amiche sono. Ah, e se io non mi inganno con la comune usanza, prima che passionando con la tua sposa torno, come orchi e di la notte, hai da bravar che spunti fuona il giorno. Nelle più cocenti brave, nelle più fervide voglie, sono i cibi che la moglie adeguati a tanta fame. Ma in febbre poi credi io che sazio di goder scemi il desio della moglie nella mensa. Ben si sa, son digiuni in quantità, se non è vero il marito amoroso, amoroso parassito. Ma tu, che sei lontano dalla consorte tua, come noiose passi l'ore a fannese. Ohimè, signor, ohimè! Con questa ricordanza m'arreggi il mio seno, benché per tante nozze di dolcissimi cibi io sia di pieno. Per un giovin pari a me, all'insaziabile desio di moglie, obbligate a verso i foglie, insopportabile, insopportabile, dorme il tuo affè. Son le donne fastidiose, strane, sospettose, che la perde notte di sempre di saterebbe, saterebbe un buon di sasso. Cibo d'ognuno stato, benché dolci anco sia, noi ad un palato. Per finir vuole sui liete, buon che ne tenne in libertà, quando s'asseva innanzi, quando s'asseva innanzi dalla moglie, in questi laggi a volto, chi lontano sa stare, è mezzo, mezzo sciolto. Ma la tua sposa viene, godi, godi, signore, addio. Non invidio il tuo bene, ma bravo un giorno sol godere anch'io. Così, così, mia bella
difficile tempo del mio tradito padre. Serva, serva mio ben, serva, candida più che cielo, quella che a me giurosti eterna fede. Pare tu che ciò veloce che ti sia diventato in parte il piede. Fermo, fermo, e
nel letto con gli sposi tutte le tue sorelle han fatto sangue. Lo sposo tuo dov'è? Sembri molto turbata. Dirve, tu pur antonella e solata. Ma viene appunto il re, qui ritirata voglio il termine osservare di questo imbroglio.
Ogni altra cara figlia che sorella era mentir mie brave, al suo novello sposo quella bella vita al tronco lo stave, e feo fumar di caldo sangue tu pur al viver mio sopra l'ara di morte offerto avrai di tuo consorte i giorni. Degno di voi sperar lo sposo vedere il padre. Ma come a me ti mostri troppo dolente, temi che di liceo maggiori manchino amanti. Oh, che ben mille cori della tua beltà non degno prezzo.
Se non muta costume starà vedova un pezzo.
Ma tempo fiacchio miri.
Lascia signore e lascia brive ogni sognore, lascia l'antir letto le rose fiore.
Come troppo pietosa figlia troppo m'offendi. Pensi che del mio seno gli spirti dal timor giammai non vinti paventi in forse nel rimirar gli estinti.
Ferma, signore mio, ferma, prima gli infatti tuoi, forse vedrai ciò che veder non vuoi.
Come non voglio, signori imposi?
Oddio!
Dov'è perfida? Dov'è linceo? Sure.
senti perino e salvo il reo. Tacili! Se mai non vide per i secoli andati il mondo antico contro il suo genitor, figlia più cruda, di me non vedrà mai finché non cada padre di crudo ancor contro una figlia. Per colpa tanto impegna, in tua muta vendetta, per chi lasci cadere morte aspetta.
Che giustizia bestiale! Qui si castiga chi non vuol far male.
O crescente, in mio corpo, o crescente,
genere facondo, qui si marita per la fine al mondo, ammazzare il consorte è troppo gran peccato, infino a dargli in su di un testo un colpo, onde la morte poi curra e pesante, ad un marito mio l'ho fatto pur anch'io. Povera ipernestra, vera qual io sono, ho fatto bene a per di lui pietà, il cielo aiuterà, stia pur sicura che giovine scortese è un altro di natura. Al servizio è sempre bene, è sempre bene. E si scelva il capitale, perché chi ricede male si capite metti il cine. Giving favors is an investment, is an investment. Domine, è ai suoi voleri che ti han amanti un numero pubblicato a la vecchia di memorie del passato può ricevere da lor mille piaceri, piaceri tanti e grati quanto son fuor di tempo e fuor di spene. Giving favors is an investment, is an investment.
I'm sorry. Maestra, de senti, debbo ballarti sola. Elisa, con licenza, tanto chi ha la mia detta una parola.
Mia dottrice, che bravi!
Oh, cara figlia, speranza del mio cuore. Anche per tuo onore, ogni or di pianto furro dalle ciglia. Armante, il bel garzone che tien cura di te m'ha dato indizio, spinto da compassione, che avrebbe gusto sol farti servizio. Fate l'amica e ti sarà cortese. Vedrai, vedrai, se non ti mostri a fare il mio voler, ritrosa e lenta, lieto lui, festosa, e me contenta, me contenta.
Forse, ma si presumi che sceglierà di accessi, ombre portare della mia fama ai lumi, questa che ti risiedi, alma, amor formosa, incedente, omettoci due figlie di vicini costanza.
cangia, cangia pensiero, dirò sol la verità, hai bensì capacità per saper se il palio è vero. Figlia mia, cangia, cangia pensiero, cangia, cangia pensiero. E lo stento è grande amico, il bisogno tanta legge, siamo al tempo antico, agli stracci non si regge. Semplicità non bisogna, semplicità non bisogna, che età freni la vergogna. Di chi fa con accortezza non si sanno da questo ombre, o di quelli segretezza ogni macchia chi copre. Questi martir per te è troppo, troppo severo. Figlia mia, cangia, cangia pensiero, cangia, cangia pensiero.
Sembiante, se bugiardo non è dell'umiltetto, del parricino tuo goder l'oggetto. Forse, perfida, forse, non mi appresse tu deggia della morte del re, gli alti perii dalle figi di lui, prendi consigli.
Tocchi, tocchi, e se crudeli, credi che vivo per su me la pelle.
Quadri armato già dirci ha partito, argo minaccia. Volgi, volgi amore in disdegno, chi vuol tuo padre estinto odia anco te, di te non è più degno. Ama dunque, ama dunque,
Bella
al tuo seno sugli altari la morte e ma un'alma crude purunque stia coraggio a madre caro non splenda me di vani lumi tuoi nega nega pietà se vuoi a chi t'adora ed immolarti invece al paterno rigore offre i sen sacra l'alma e dona il cuore
Armante ben comprendo quanto alla tua pietà io resti avvinto ne fio che venghi estinto memoria si gradito e se fossero i miei spiriti miei tutti 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 a te ma che possivo forza forza d'amore vede gli affetti miei sono per le giovi
non ti son pieni grata esserne lievi forze e non pervenga ma se non mi curi per avermi nemico all'elodio all'amor quanto al filichino le tenero i preghi avrà la forza ove ne vai
ove ti incontro la tua morte ove vieni
i mani e preghi
sul luogo da fatti
or dunque in questo resti gli affanni pieni io ti seguo
più lievi affar, curati prendi.
vedi, tiranno, vedi, ben che spietato è reo, or sei, or sei.
Feconda la lingua mia, come il mio cor n'abbonda.
Barbaro vostri tuoi desideri, prendi, prendi la tua consiglia.
consorti la dovuta mercede.
Una stiamone
egli a te porta sdegno.
I desti vita
egli ne vola un regno. Godi, bella, godi, felici sorelle, sono il fantanere ed errare il padre, scherno veder, scellerate squadre. Appaga, appaga il tuo furore, dalle viscere mie spellimi il cuore. Godi, godi, bella, godi delle strade e del sangue, ma ti neghi i cieli. E dell'alma crudele che ti risiedi in seno sia conforto il dolor, cibo il veleno.
Quanto semplice
fue anch'essa linceo, ma il loro amore sulla più fresca edade, ogni cosa si infolge in riso un gioco, svanirò come fiori. Tu sei lungi dagli occhi e sempre piaci più quel che si vede, né io punto mi fido, né io punto mi fido di quel furbo, di quel furbo di Cupido.
E la mia costante felisa si chinare, e tu lo sai, prove mi diede dei suoi lucidi appelli, chi in vano oggi presumi con geloso timore renderne fuschi ed egressarne in lunghi.
Partisti per intracciar delle temute squadre se l'ordine e il valor risponda avanti. Ogni arsace palese, quai sia nel pieno duce l'armi e le pompe a nostri tanti tese. Fra numeroso stuolo di guerriti guerriere d'asta e di scudo, quanti sotersi acciari diffonde raggi il sole, tanti tornano al sol raggi più chiari. Avanzano i destrieri mentre rifiuti loro il ciel rimbomba, col piede appando l'inimico suono a cadaveri d'argo apron la tomba. Scherza, candide piume sopra gli elmi più fini, e in teste con barbarico lavoro, reggia di usberghi il cuore lamine d'oro. In ordine composto, diviso in quattro campi, un campo solo, e
ed ogni capo un quattro schiere è smalto. Di letto, rari, orrori, orri da sembra da di lui bellezza, e nel proprio terror rende vaghezza. Amor, amor, mi spinge a normi, e metto il passo a fretta, in ogni gesto a me chiede vendetta. Se non destano ardente, entro al suo cuore due voci di pietà, qualche scintilla, forza, forza, venir, che certe son le perdite nostre, argo bacilla.
Avrai che giorno precorresse il grido che di Gebete sposa vive in argo ipermestra e più linceo non cura. Pur che d'altri non sia ipermestra è mio bella anima mia. Faccia stella severa, cargo Danao ed Arvante, e il mondo pera.
Alindo, ove meschino, ove sei tu condotto?
Non mi inganno per certo.
Chiamerata, che fai?
Oh, mio patrino!
A che qui ti portasti?
Il mio signore al liceo fu spedito ambasciatore, io pur lo seguo.
Oh, oh, quanto godo di vederti!
Io pur ne godo.
Dimmi, e si fa in largo, sapendo io qui sono, il vostro re, e mi dice di me.
Danao con l'altra gente di questa soldatesca prende gioco, di te non parla mai punto che poco.
Ipermestra, che fa?
Adesso è tempo di servire al padrone, senti Vaffrino,
ma silenzio, sappi, sappi chi permestra,
ma basta. Non ti posso dir altro.
Alindo, senti! Oddio, ti può condurre in carcere segreta, o dimmela dalla fino alla zitta.
Già che con sì bel modo mi preghi, ascolta. Quando da lei Linceo partì, in quell'istesso istesso dì, Gebete la sposò. Gli piacque, e questo ti basti sol per farti noto il resto.
Così me l'impensavo, Alindo, addio,
Vaffrin, ti sono schiavo.
Così per la sua sposa ha ben ragion Linceo, a divenir guerriero se gli ha fatto, se gli ha fatto il cimiero. E la donna un certo che il passato non apprezza, l'avvenir non accarezza, solo stima quel cuore, e la donna un certo che alle femmine ne non va, offerir, offerir quel che sarà. E nel consiglio del Giappun non ne voglio parlar più, sol per renderle contente, se li tratti col presente, non speri chi è lontano, amore e fe. E la donna, certo che
Thank you.
for montar le mura, altri cerca prestar scale d'ordigni, e già son ardiate in varie liste, catapulte e montoni, archi e guadiste. E tranzi al centro sono, saette, spavillare, spade, troncarsi l'alce, e per aprirsi il marco della terza cittade, gli ordiei purar, 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 con formidabil, formidabil colpo. Il soffrir più di more, al glorioso assalto, tormentoso si re. Con il cocello gran signor s'attende.
Ben saggiamente operasti, donne del vino, donne,
parto, e già farmi altero nell'immortal vittoria, e il tuo nome ho liceo, alla gloria.
Divenendo ed arredir l'anima accesa. Ma se volgo il pensiero di ver mestra il dolor, il si giusto furor s'agghiaccia, l'anima s'agghiaccia.
Cennio mio legge
sotto mentite spoglie oggi ti porta in arco
a quali affari
la mia fide per mestra
il ciel te lo perdoni
che dirai
quanto intesi
onesti
che tua sposa dopo il nostro partire che fu con lo scalar le regge mura e la calata e più di te non cura
non me lo vesti
appunto
per altri affari al campo d'Argo, venuto un personaggio in fretta, porta questa gazzetta.
Voci! Prati per maestro a me si infida, vedrò rotare il sole per contrario sentir da primo porto. Ferme le sfere, loge anzi zonde, immobile fortuna. Nascere in cielo
cose belle, s'io fossi lei, perdonami s'io pecco, sol per vederle, ti farei bugiardo. S'io copra mio senno, ritorna e non far guerra, si fratelli non hai, contenner non dovrai, indiviner con loro il patrio regno. Ecco, l'ambasciatore Vitano a te sen viene. Sentilo, e se si può, cerca d'accomodarla con parole. Glorioso Linceo!
Fermati, Ermante! Pria che d'ogni altro fare, meco per l'artaccino, sincero, a me palese, ogni opera di per mestra.
A te non venne de novelli, me ne l'avviso ancora.
Fortunato veleno, pur le vene serpendo, un corso si infonde. Segue, Ermante, quei detti!
Accedete, arzo di regio sangue e di Corinto erede, già nel cuore la fede, per voi ispirerà sino di più teneri affetti, per lui oggi riporta della bellezza sopra ogni altro i vanti, a questo dana o destino l'avanti, carico avrar la pace da vostra armi nemiche e fosse a stretto ed egli osire quello e con forte drappello contro il valor delle fraterne squadre ai soccorso del re pronto ne venne ed oggi in premio la tua sposa ottenne.
Come non muore, eppure vivo e sento, e non c'è nel mio cuore il mio tormento.
Questo è tuo sembiante simulacro fedele. Così strana e che davvero ogni speranza che fana.
Come attana ritorna, digli come se noi conservi di cose, ardor del mio seno, quel tramonto, a questi avvenena e sparger sollergino sangue anena.
E pur vorrai,
taci! Thank you.
città nemica, scatole muta.
Oddio, che sento!
Prende tu della bella Elisa, pure intanto l'offrino. Voi ne confete, al trionfo verrete, sofferite, uccidete. E di per me strappini morta, lacera del cuore, si arrivi a maggiore.
Contro la fida sposa,
ad altro tempo servo, care, parlarvi. Non è per me.
numerosi accenti, la vincente il furore delle nemiche spade. Guarda, guarda ancor di vendetta il nostro cuore. Se altri è la vittoria, sia nella morte al me, un generoso ardire nostra la gloria. Amici, e che s'attende? Splenda, splenda il fulgor dell'impugnato brando, con eterno coraggio dell'argivo valore l'ultimo raggio. Per voi l'età futura prenda come si immortali col sangue il proprio nome.
With mighty cries and a flaming personnel carrier, the assault on Argos begins. King Danno is stabbed to death by Liceno. The oracle has come true. What hope now for Hypermestra in her prison? The end of Act Two of Francesco Cavalli's opera Hypermestra. Emmacou Barrett sings the role of Hypermestra, and Raffaele Pei is Linceo. Benjamin Hewlett is Arbante, and Renato Dolcini, King Danno. Anna Kingtash sings Elisa, and Mark Wilde, Berenice. Rodrigo Ferreira is Del Miro, Anthony Gregory, Vafrino, David Webb, Asace, and Alessandro Fischer, Alindo. And William Christie conducts members of the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. In about 10 or so minutes, we'll be hearing the third act of Cavalli's opera, Hypermestra, in a broadcast from this year's Glyndebourne Festival here on BBC Radio 3. If you'd like to know more about this production, look at pictures, read a synopsis, or learn about the cast, then head for the Radio 3 website. The edition of Cavalli's Hypermestra here at Glyndebourne has been prepared by the scholar and conductor William Christie, a champion of music from the 17th and 18th centuries that he feels has been overlooked. Well, I caught up with Christie earlier in the season and reminded him that although Raymond Lepard had introduced two of Cavalli's operas to Glyndebourne audiences half a century ago now, performances of the Venetian composer's works were still something of a rarity.
I think he's caught up in a kind of a time problem. He follows in the heels of Monteverdi's theatrical career, and he comes sort of before this enormous glut of people like Stradella and Scarlatti and Handel, of course, and the flowering of mid and late Baroque music. Also, I think, too, that like French music, this music suffers if it isn't done with a little bit of respect. And I say that obviously thinking about someone who was very important here in Glyndebourne 50 years ago, Raymond Lepard. He genuinely loves this music, and Glyndebourne would be one of the first to sort of do it. To make it palatable for an audience back 50 years ago, it had to sound a little bit more like the music that an audience was hearing with the LSO and a conductor and lots of sound. He got criticized at that particular moment as well, but he was genuinely, I think, loved for bringing an unknown composer into view, you see. We've come a long way, obviously, the historical performance. But it has done wonderful things for early music. I mean, one has to admit that, you know. I've wanted to do Cavalli here. Why? Because I like the challenge. I like picking up on traditions. I like confrontation. But I think what I'm doing is I'm sort of pointing to a composer who needed lots and lots of help back then, who still needs lots of help, but within a perimeter, I think, that might be considered to be more sort of musicological and more historically sort of respectful.
We do know more about this opera, perhaps, than we know about the operas written for Venice, don't we? Is that helpful when you're preparing?
No, it's not helpful at all. We have lots and lots of material, written material, libretti, you know. We have a prologue. And then we also have, of course, all the music that was written either by Cavalli or someone else. for these elaborate dances. This was a real court mask. So what we're left with, essentially, is Cavalli's autograph, which has two violin parts for the ritornelle, and there's a single bass line to be shared by all the continuum. That's not an awful lot, you know, when you stop to think that, my God, you know, there were cyclopses dancing and nymphs in chorus and dances and mock battles. All that's disappeared, you see, all of it.
How much does Cavalli in the autograph score tell you about performing it? I mean, are there expression marks? Are there any things that hint at what he wanted at particular moments?
Well, I think, you know, I've asked myself the question, and I think it's a valid question, what does he like? You can tell what Monteverdi likes. Monteverdi is an extraordinary composer with shrewd dramatic insight, wonderful gifts of melody and what have you. Cavalli's interested in the beauty of the voice. You know, we're already in essentially the bel canto tradition, which is going to come all the way to the present day. Puccini and Verdi belong to this tradition, essentially, of beautiful voices. Is there anything else? Yes, text. I mean, the text is very, very important. But other than that, no. We don't have a huge orchestra. We don't have dancers. In other words, it's the antithesis of the French spectacle, of the tragédie lyrique or the ballet.
Obviously, the centre of a Cavalli opera is indeed, as you said, the recitative and the care with which the language leads. But when we get to arias, possibly rare duets, I mean, is there a sense in which you feel Cavalli is pushing operatic form?
He sure is. He's no fool. I mean, he wants to please. You have a Miles recitative, which I love. I think we worked very hard to make that come alive. But let's face it, people want to hear good voices sing something organized and a bit more spectacular. That's the aria. And they are wonderful. And most of them are cast, of course, in this very Cavalli-esque 3 triple-meter time, these enormously sort of pathetic lamenti. And then, of course, we have the antidote to that, which is burlesque. And that in almost every opera of Cavalli. And the tradition here was rustic comedy, you know, with Ormindo and La Calisto. And they had cross-dressers and all that camp stuff that, of course, back 50 years ago was very, very intriguing for a rather staid, glamborn public. Today, we're doing Ypres Maestre, and what do we have amongst the cast? We have Berenice, who's the bearded lady. And this, again, this is another way that Cavalli brings us into popular song. Very important. Very important.
As you've worked on this production, as you've worked on the autograph score, have you come to the decision that this is a piece that has a life outside, let's say, a festival like Glyndebourne, that this is a piece that we ought to know better to understand, as you said, where bel canto comes from?
Is there a life after Glyndebourne? Well, yes, very much so. I would say that on the strength of what people are going to hear now, yes, I would almost bank on it.
William Christie, music director tonight, and who's prepared this new edition of Ypres Maestre. Well, I'm joined in the box here again at Glyndebourne tonight by the opera historian Sarah Lenton. It's clear that William Christie loves this opera. How well do you think it actually works?
I was sitting here intrigued that how few things change in Italian opera. In a way, there's quite a spare orchestra, of course, but it is there just to support the voice, which Verdi would have agreed with. And this huge interest in the libretto, which again, even as you came into the 19th century, the words were of paramount importance to Puccini and Verdi. So some things struck me as familiar, and an awful lot did not, like 2 hours of recitative. And I was so interested in the way that Vicar directed it, because it's encounters, isn't it? There's two people on stage and they thrash something out and then one of them sings a solo. And the way it was directed intrigued me. I thought it was incredibly well done.
There's a curious mixture, as indeed Christie says, of what he calls the burlesque and the tragic. I mean, this is a moment, curiously, perhaps in the history of opera, where those awful lines between tragedy on the right and comedy doesn't exist. You can put the two together.
In fact, I'd imagine a 19th century Italian opera goer would have been appalled. He couldn't, you know, when did it stop? This is so interesting. Opera seria, suddenly opera is serious and we get very little comedy. So this 17th century moment, somebody did make a connection between these 17th century composers and Shakespeare at some point. And I feel, although they didn't see Shakespeare, It is a 17th century sort of mood.
There's a small band, just 10 people, which we can see very clearly from where we're sitting. But the sound, nevertheless, it may not be Raymond Lepard's version of Cavalli, but it has a kind of richness and those insinuating harmonies constantly undermining.
I was so interested in the texture, and sometimes an instrument will suddenly come into prominence and then disappear again. There's astonishing Baroque guitars and the softer sound of the oboe, and then suddenly on stage, the recit would suddenly flower into an arioso and out. I'm interested in the Middle Eastern setting.
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? Ooh. Does it work if you fast forward it from the Baroque period to today in the Middle East?
I've been thinking about it as I've been watching, and I thought it's a primitive and it's a savage tale, 49 chaps killed, and a father pushing his daughter to kill her husband. I mean, it obviously it's extraordinarily primitive, played through a modern sensibility, which is the 17th century nervous system and their terrific eloquence. And then on top of that, a modern savagery. And I think it's there that I get some reservations.
But there is also a kind of modernity about the women. They are much tougher, much stronger, much more determined. Ipemestre and Elisa, perhaps, than we might have expected in the 17th century. They too seem to belong to our own age.
The 17th, and indeed the 18th century woman, often survives an opera from sheer determination and self-knowledge, self-propelling almost. You can almost see it in their costumes, actually. Their 17th century costumes are actually easier to wear and move around in. So perhaps we see them through the lens of the 19th century, more passive heroine. But I think if you go back to the 17th and 18th century, you do get this very tough lady.
There may be no Baroque spectacle. There may not be all those noblemen dancing at the mountain and all those things, but there is spectacle on stage, as you'd expect from Graham Vick, isn't there? There's not only the personnel carrier, there's one burning, there are oil wells nodding, there's this huge palace.
And a rather flash car. I'm not very good on cars, but that looked terrific. And a bravura, the moment when the travesty, Berenice, suddenly throws blood-stained sheets into the laundrette with a wonderful flourish of rococo, I thought. So I thought that was terribly fun.
We know that Cavalli wrote over 40 operas. Do you think there are other gems waiting for us to discover?
There doubtless are. The question is, have Graham Vick and William Christie convinced us that we want to find them?
Sarah Lenton, thank you very much indeed. You're listening to Opera on 3 here on BBC Radio 3 with me, Christopher Cook. And we're at Lyngbourne for the third and final act now of Francesco Cavalli's opera Ipemestre. Linceo's army has done its worst. King Danao's palace is a pile of rubble. The coffered ceiling has collapsed and the walls caved in. And in the centre of the stage are the remains of the bed in which Ipemestre and Linceo almost spent the first night of their honeymoon. A solo violinist plays amongst the wreckage, and then William Christie, no less, climbs over what is left of the ceiling. Gradually, the 10 musicians make their way back to their positions at the front of the stage. In the midst of man-made chaos, there can still be music, but will it soothe the savage breast? Now we've a plot filled with plots and counterplots. Ipemestre demands that Linceo's general Del Miro should kill her, but moved by her distress, he encourages her to escape. As for Linceo, he is convinced that Ipemestre has been killed, and he turns his attention to Elisa. But Elisa's conscience gets the better of her own desires. She tells Linceo that Arbate had lied about Ipemestre's marriage to that prince of Corinth. Too late, perhaps. Despairing of ever seeing Linceo again, Ipemestre throws herself from the top of a tall tower. But this is opera, Baroque opera, and she's carried aloft to safety by a giant peacock, the emblem of Juno and the goddess of fidelity. But will the reunited Ipemestre and Linceo now live happily ever after? Raffaele Pei.
Perhaps happiness is a word they will use with a more mature feeling. After all they faced, suddenly life together will mean something more adult-like, I think.
I think the end is quite obscure, and it's not a very optimistic future for Ipemestre as a wife and as a woman. For me, I don't think it's a very happy ending, but maybe for Ipemestre, maybe she's so much in love with Linceo that it will satisfy her for the rest of her life.
Ermacu Borat, who sings the role of Hypermestra tonight. Her Linceo is Raffaele Pei. Benjamin Hewlett is Arbante and Renata Dolcini King Dana. Anna Quintas sings Elisa and Mark Wilde Berenice. Rodrigo Ferreira is Delmiro. Anthony Gregory, Vafrino, David Webb, Arsace, and Alessandro Fischer, Alindo. William Christie conducts members of the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, led by Cati Debrezzeni, in Act 3 now of Graham Vick's production of Francesco Cavalli's opera, Hypermestra.
Thank you.
lascia l'inceo l'impose d'eseguirlo al giurai.
Poi che forte me bevi, all'inceo mi conduci, e se improvvisa come furbi di cestina gloria primo, confine destino, egli, egli mi scagli, e spetta nel sangue mio le troppo ardenti.
Scappa la vita. cor mio, dimmi che fai. Quasi trovo del tuo più grave errore, fu pura opera di te, perfido amore, s'innocente metà tradire osai. Con scellerato inganno contro la patria di linceo nel cuore svegliai lo sdegno a più crudel vendetta. Infelice ipermestra, priva di sposo genitore, regno mendicando soccorso per me, per me si vede invidiar gli estinti. Uscite in cagarotti, corri di mostri, e lacerate il seno, sarà gliati di vostri denverme, con il cor pungenti meno. Ovunque il guardo gira, chi vero intende, o dei, e tradimenti miei codesti spettacoli rivira.
Thank you. Oddio, l'inceo, e fissando nel tuo ritratto gli affannati rumori, il pianto di dolore, negandoti se feo pianto d'amore. E su quei sembianti di cielo
la vedo, è pur caduta lì.
Mofrin, che c'hai lì?
Colibiti dal lume, più guardi ben tra questi sassi.
E che perresti?
Io mi confondo. Le pur caduta lì, corvo del mondo.
Che cosa?
Elisa, senti, chi per me strappò tanzi, dopo lungo lamento, precipitossi dalla torre.
E dove?
In quel luogo, appunto.
Scherzi, forse?
Non credo già di sognar, in fede mia te giuro. Credimi del sicuro, di lassù se gettate, se qui non si trova, è sfontata. Ma per la gola io mento, e serve un po' che nel cader per aria, dietro alla torre, l'abbia spinta il vento.
Oh, se morta sei tu, terra, cui consulei questa
più barbaro mostro che più d'essero in sé nati d'averlo. Io mi son che volli dell'amor di permessa i cavo incauto sormontare al cielo e fabbricai per innalzarmi a volo che termino se proprio dando con pene di menzogne ali d'inganno. Sper potessi godere un giorno il desiato fine, le tolsi il tuo ritratto, in fila e accusai, nacquero, oh Dio, e del regno latio da si finto per arvere ruine. O gran re, che apprendo nella di lei costanza, disperato il mio amore, morir è letto, almeno sarà per evitar fanno peggiore.
Sovrappunte gloria esercitasse su il rigore il fato,
A happy end. At least that's what the music seems to be telling us. At the end of Act 3 of Francesco Cavalli's opera Tipo Mestre, though Cavalli's daring harmonies seem to hint at a different outcome. That applause for the 10 members of the orchestra from the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, conducted by William Christie, who of course prepared this edition, blowing a kiss to the audience with his musicians around him, who've been actors as much as musicians in this particular production. And now the curtain rises on a group of young men who've been the actors, one woman amongst them, in the course of the war and drama that we've watched and listened to here at Glyndebourne. Alindo, sung by Alessandro Fischer, Del Miro, Rodrigo Ferreira, Vafrino, Anthony Gregory, joined by Berenice Mark Wilde, and also by Elisa, sung by Anna Quintanche, Abante, Benjamin Hewlett, and Damon, sung by Renato Dolcini. Vinceo was sung, of course, by Raffaele Pei. Each one steps forward, that huge cheer for Berenice, who stole every heart, including almost that of the season's conductor, William Christie, when she disappeared into the pit and stole his white prayer hat. Applause for Elisa, sung by Anna Quintanche, and for the countertenor Vincere La Felipe. And huge applause there for tonight's hipermestra, that's Emma Kubora. The whole cast up front of the stage, bowing, acknowledging the applause of, as always here at Glyndebourne, an enormously enthusiastic audience. And in a very nice touch, which is also perhaps now part of Glyndebourne, they turn and applaud both the musicians and the audience for whom they have sung and acted this evening, and the musicians making their way on stage. Philip Christie shaking his cast generously by the hand, as if he's keeping his distance from Berenice, who, quite apart from trying to steal his prayer hat and flirting with him, had a very friendly relationship with a member of the audience. You probably heard the laughter at the end of the third act. Now the whole cast and the musicians lined up at the front of the stage. Behind them, the wreckage of Argos after war has swept through it, or maybe some Middle Eastern city. And I think the applause is likely to go on for some while here at Glyndebourne tonight. And now it's time to return you to my colleague in Broadcasting House from Glyndebourne, where we have been watching Cavalli's opera Hipermestra.
Christopher Cook presented tonight's opera on three, which was recorded at Glyndebourne in June. And there's more early opera next Saturday. Davide Pozzi conducts the period group La Veneziana in a performance of Monteverdi's L'Incoronazione di Poppea, which they gave at this year's Schwetzingen Festival in Germany. That'll be starting slightly earlier next Saturday at 6 o'clock. Meanwhile, there's also opera on Thursday afternoon, this time from the later Baroque. Handel based his opera Lucio Cornelio Sylla on the life of the Roman general Lucius Sulla. Georgia Mann presents a concert performance from a festival in Vienna. That's in afternoon on three at 2 o'clock on Thursday. But we don't need to abandon Francesco Cavalli quite yet. Opera is what he's best known for, but he also had a long career at St Mark's in Venice. He was taken on there first as a singer by Monteverdi, and half a century later he'd worked his way up to the post of Maestro di Cappella. This is his setting of the Salve Regina.
Thank you.
Harry Christopher's directing the 16 in a setting of the Salve Regina by Francesco Cavalli. And incidentally, if you didn't hear the whole of Cavalli's Hypermestra from Glyndebourne, there's still plenty of time to catch it. It'll be on the Radio 3 website from now until very near the end of October. Well, Andrew McGregor introduces next week's Opera on Three by Monteverdi. He also pops up on Thursday, this time with something of a contrast.
Two 20th century British works that could hardly be more different. After two world wars, turmoil rips through Tippett's Third Symphony before a soprano brings a message of heartfelt sorrow. And the female voice takes centre stage in Elgar's poignant Sea Pictures. The BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and the singers Rachel Nichols and Karen Cargill live in concert next Thursday night at 7:30. And then available on the BBC Radio 3 website.